This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
Once this storm is upon us, we're not going to be able to send emergency personnel out
right.
to save you or to help you. You have to heed those warnings, get out of harm's way before this storm takes place, and just ride this thing out.
Well, voices there from the Carolinas as hospitals in the region are preparing for the arrival of Hurricane Florence. Some medical facilities and nursing homes in the direct path of the hurricane are moving patients inland. Other medical personnel are staying put and staying open in their role as first responders in what's expected to be a powerful and devastating storm. So wondering if you are in the path of Hurricane Florence and if you are evacuating or have chosen to stay put. And has a loved one been moved from a coastline hospital? Do you know where they've been moved to? And how is it that after Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Katrina and all the big storms that we've had, what have we learned about how to keep key medical centers up and running through the storm and the recovery period? Well, joining us first right now is Matt Wayne. He's with us from Charleston, South Carolina. He's Chief Operations Officer at Medical University of South Carolina Health. Matt Wayne, welcome to On Point.
Meghna, it's great to be here.
How are you guys doing right now?
We're doing great. There's a lot of great preparation that's going on. We're really positioned to succeed. The team here at MUSC has a tremendous amount of experience with hurricanes and hurricane preparation, and really our focus continues to be, as it should, on being ready to take care of patients and families throughout South Carolina, or as a way of receiving patients from other communities that are equally or more so devastated by the onset of Hurricane Florence.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about where the facility is located? Are you guys in a low-lying area? I mean, what's the thing that you're most concerned about in order to your ability to stay open as the storm progresses?
The majority of our facilities are in downtown Charleston, so we're right on the peninsula and immediately on the coast. And so while there are several models and there are variabilities to them with this storm, in most cases, we are expected to see a significant impact from Hurricane Florence and are preparing and planning in earnest for that.
Okay. And so, but what are the impacts that you're worrying about? Because I remember, you know, from Katrina, for example, we had some pretty terrible stories there of hospitals, you know, getting flooded, generators being knocked out. So, of course, generators and, well, electricity powers so many key, literally life-saving instruments in a hospital. So what's your area of greatest concern?
I think right now it's the uncertainty of what the storm's going to do. And at
right.
the same time, we can't worry about that. We can only worry about the preparation and planning that will make us successful in taking care of patients who trust their care to us and those patients and families that are disrupted by the storm and need us when they haven't in the past. And so in order to do that, we've been planning in earnest over the weekend, throughout the week. We've got about a week and a half worth of all significant supplies on hand. We have extra diesel fuel to be able to run sustained operations in the event of a power loss for several days. We've really got a lot of preparedness here, and our ability to control those things that we can control, the weather not one of them. We are ready, and people throughout South Carolina should know they can trust MUSC Health if they need us.
Yeah, so, and how many beds do you have there?
We're a facility of over 800 beds, and we run four unique hospitals in downtown Charleston.
And is the center expected to stay open through the entire storm?
We are. MUSC Health is the only academic medical center in the state of South Carolina, and as such, we've been afforded an exemption to the medical evacuation order. So we're here to take care of those patients and families that otherwise may not have appropriate care available to them. We've already seen an influx of patients from hospitals that are closing or who are more in the line of the storm in the Myrtle Beach area. And so we've continued to look to be able to serve the citizens of South Carolina and are ready, if necessary, to serve the citizens of North Carolina as well.
Yeah, so really, really important medical center there, obviously, and for the whole state. Does that mean that is the entire hospital staff, all personnel, going to be expected to be at work through the storm? And, you know, obviously people may not be able to go home. How are you managing, you know, taking care of employees?
Yeah, that's a very good question because we focus on patients, but at the end of the day, it's our care team members who make that possible. They're the strength of our organization. And so we have communicated with them. We run every 4 hours. We have an open conference call with any member of our care team who would like to listen in to the decisions and why we're making them. And we provide around-the-clock communications in terms of email, social messaging, an alert system through text. And so we've got a large number of our staff and our providers in-house. They all, without a problem, commit to being here. Charleston, we've learned a lot in the last few years for us specifically from Hurricanes Matthew and Irma, and have made adjustments in order to better take care of our care team members. We set up R&R areas, if you will. We turn amphitheaters and conference rooms into a movie house. We run our wellness center and open that up. We have sleeping accommodations. And so we get to the point where it's not just about taking care of patients. It's really about taking care of our care team as well, so that we can be rest assured our patients received the best care that's highly reliable and safe.
Yeah. Well, Matt Wayne, stand by for just a second. That's Matt Wayne. He's joining us from Charleston, South Carolina. He's Chief Operations Officer at Medical University of South Carolina Health. And we are talking about, the really important health care infrastructure that also has to weather whatever Hurricane Florence is going to bring. And as Matt Wayne said, they have to get an exemption from the mandatory evacuation orders in order to keep this key hospital open. So Matt, hang on here for just a second, because let's go to Houston, Texas now. Douglas Brinkley joins us. He's a presidential historian and professor of history at Rice University. He was a professor at Tulane University in New Orleans when Hurricane Katrina hit in 2005, and he's author of the book The Great Deluge, Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans, and the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Douglas Brinkley, welcome back to On Point.
Well, thanks for having me on, Megan.
It's great to have you. Matt Wayne there said very clearly that their multiple experiences with hurricanes has led to a lot of learning at Medical University of South Carolina. And I just wanted to talk with you because that's a good thing, because we've had, Katrina was the example of how we had medical failures as well. And I just to remind folks, I was going back and reading stories about Memorial Medical Center in Uptown New Orleans and the disasters that happened there.
Well, look, the big thing, when we talk about the deadliest storm in U.S. history on record, it occurred in 1900 near where I'm at in Houston, in Galveston, Texas, and over 6,000 people died in Galveston. Why so many dead in Galveston? Well, in 1900, we didn't have forecasting, so people failed to evacuate. There's no excuse at this point in the 21st century for people to be hearing how devastating things are going to be on North Carolina, not to get out, not to evacuate. And we'll be judging the people there in North Carolina of how did they do with their less, the people on lower economic scale, people that didn't have automobiles to drive away. Was there mass transportation that takes people away? Many older seniors don't want to leave their dog or cat. Are there evacuation services that allow you to bring pets with you? On and on. But the big medical challenge, as I see it, is the blackout. When you lose electricity for 48 hours, you start getting unnecessary death. People will die that were supposed to be on a dialysis machine, people that need their respirator, the people that can't find their medication in the darkness, or the floodwaters wash your medications away. You have people that will die of heart attacks and strokes from the stress of it all. So it's very important to try to get out, number one, and number two, to make sure the local medical infrastructure knows where those people that are staying are and try to get to them within 48 hours.
Yeah. Matt Wayne, let me just turn back to you for a second, because what Douglas Brinkley said just got me thinking. Obviously there are patients with different levels of need, some of whom maybe could be evacuated. Have you relocated some patients?
Of course. We want to minimize our census to only what's medically necessary here. We want, and our primary goal is to keep people safe. And so we've been working all week to make sure that we can get people discharged when medically appropriate and either home or into a place that's safe. Additionally, I think he makes some great points. And so, with just on a couple of things where we've learned, right, we contact all of our patients who are on dialysis and remind them to make sure batteries are in order. If they need to come in and get checkups early and get the things they need, we accommodate them. We open our retail pharmacies to the community so that we can make sure people have meds. We've made virtual care We can do virtual urgent care for no charge for any citizen in South Carolina who doesn't have access to care, so that if they have a question, we can answer it, and if necessary, we can provide them with a face-to-face with a provider. We acquired a light medium tactical vehicle that will drive through, you know, up to 6 to 8 feet of water, because Charleston's known to flood. And one of the things we learned when we had to transport a surgeon between two of our hospitals by boat the last time was that that's not the best way to make sure that you've got care providers in the right place. And so we literally have an LMTV, which we acquired as military surplus, that we've painted and put to work in good use. And so we're ready. I'm sure there's things that we will learn from this as well, but I'd like to think that we've done.
Can I just jump in here, Matt? I'm so sorry to interrupt, but LMTV, it's a retired military vehicle.
Yeah, it's a light medium tactical vehicle. It's literally a vehicle that's formerly used by the military. There's a 1033 program that's available to first responders, and we were able to acquire it. And so we can move staff from building to building. We can get critical supplies. If we need to get plasma to facilities because for some reason we're running through it faster in one of our locations than another, if there's a critical patient need, we can drive through some pretty deep water to ensure that we can get there safely.
Well, Douglas Brinkley, it definitely sounds like Medical University of South Carolina is as ready as it could be. And that's obviously the right thing, because I mentioned Memorial Medical Center in New Orleans from post-Katrina. And I mean, that was the place where the hurricane did knock out power and the temperature soared to, 100 degrees in the hospital. There was questions about the physicians perhaps maybe hastening the deaths of patients stuck in the hospital. There were 45 corpses in the mortuary. And then, of course, there was the stories of nursing homes that didn't evacuate when Katrina was on the way, and nursing home residents dying. So in the past, we have had terrible situations, and nobody wants that to happen again. Absolutely not.
Well, absolutely, and that's what happened in New Orleans. You picked a Memorial and Charity Hospital, which had all sorts of problems. However, there was an Ochsner Hospital that behaved in a miraculous fashion, working around the clock. The big thing is generators and energy. Can hospitals function? You made the key point that we need to learn from Katrina. A lot of people in assisted living facilities, we think they're being taken care of, but when the darkness comes, electricity's out, flooding comes, a lot of times those assisted living places get abandoned, and people will die because they're left behind there. Some of the failures of Katrina were doctors and nurses, and police for that matter, who just fled and said, I'm getting out of here, and let people die. I also, in my book, wrote about an incredible doctor who took AIDS patients that were very ill and found a way to get them airlifted out to San Antonio and wouldn't leave the patient's bedside. Yeah. One thing that's preventable for people that aren't sick or ill right now is don't go out in the high winds. I spoke to many doctors. I mean, metal flies around when winds are 140 miles an hour, and it's like shrapnel out there. And the number of people that needed stitches at hospitals because they went out in the winds to see what it would feel like, then got hit by an object.
Wow.
It's quite high. Yeah. And what it does is it fills up the hospitals unnecessarily, so you don't want to do something boneheaded like going out to feel the wind.
So I hate to do this because I don't want to bring politics into this situation when we're talking about sort of the life and death of, decisions about being ready for a hurricane. But politics does just sort of barrel its way into things. And because, just today, President Trump sent out a couple of tweets claiming, 3,000 people did not die in the two hurricanes that hit Puerto Rico. That's from his tweet. And then he said that 3,000 estimate was done by Democrats in order to make me look as bad as possible when I was successfully raising billions of dollars to help rebuild Puerto Rico. Now, to be clear, that estimate of the number of deaths, 2,975, came from the island's governor itself, following a report from the George Washington University. So, Douglas Brinkley, I just want to know what your thoughts are that the president's putting out these tweets now as the Carolinas are getting ready to face Hurricane Florence.
Well, I think President Trump's making a terrible mistake. It's foolish to be behaving that way. It's filled with self-regard instead of really trying to be a leader through this kind of crisis. The idea that we couldn't have done better in Puerto Rico is ridiculous. I mean, 2,975 death toll when President Trump acted like it was, you know, a much, much lower number than that. That's okay. Maybe Donald Trump misspoke and or if we didn't have the full count, but why not just embrace it now and say we will do better? He can't take self-criticism that Maria is seen as a failure of the Trump presidency, the slow reaction there, the inability to get people food and water quickly, the fact that it took power months to get on in some places. It wasn't given a high prioritization from this administration. I think Trump did better in Harvey in Texas. But Puerto Rico was treated like some kind of orphaned island that we didn't want to do our best with. And I think it's a sad, dark part of the Trump presidential legacy, the way that he is still speaking about the island and insulting people there.
Mm. Well, Matt Wayne, we've got 30 seconds left. I'm going to just trust that you're not worried about politics right now, but definitely staying focused on helping people there in South Carolina.
Our mission, simply put, is to optimize life. We are in a position, through preparation and planning, and having a fantastic care team here to be able to take care of the people throughout this state who might need us in an emergency. We can only control our planning and preparation. What people say, where the hurricane goes, is not anything we can control. We're ready, and I really appreciate you allowing us to share some of our preparations with your audience today.
Yeah, well, Matt Wayne, I very much appreciate your efforts in joining us today as well. Chief Operations Officer at Medical University of South Carolina, speaking to us from Charleston. Thank you so very much, Matt Wayne.
Thank you.
And Douglas Brinkley, presidential historian and professor of history at Rice University in Houston and author of The Great Deluge, Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans, and the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Douglas Brinkley, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.